Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming out tonight. I really gave this setup this year so Sarah and I could spend some more time together. That's really the background of everything going on. But really, the goal of this year tonight, this lecture tonight, and this entire mental health series is to really raise awareness and to begin discussions. We're gonna come to some conclusions tonight, but it's really to begin fostering discussions with us, with the community, about mental health. A lot of stigmas. We're going to discuss halachic issues that we're going to raise, and we're going to discuss together. This is not just a lecture with us talking. It's a discussion. If you have anything to say, please don't hesitate to raise. And also, Sarah and I are doing this together, which is exciting. It's going to be the first time that we're doing this together. So Sarah's going to go through the agenda, turn to page one, and then we'll begin. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so it's a little bit ambitious, and like my husband said, we're just beginning the conversation. So first is like a general understanding of a little bit of emotional mental health awareness, and I just have to say that it's like emotional, mental, behavioral health, there's an evolution, but we'll talk a little bit about that and like how a person is pretty complex. And just a perspective from psychology that I believe can be meaningful. Then we're going to look at how does the halacha and Torah, what is that perspective on emotional and mental health? And lastly, and there are a lot of ways that, you know, conclusions that we can draw. There's one that speaks to me, but I think there's a lot of things that come out of this. And I really do hope that it's an interactive conversation. And like it says on page one, living with both, understanding empathy of one's internal experience and behaviors, and also others' internal experience and behaviors, and at the same time, what are our expectations for growth and the sense of responsibility as an Eved Hashem? Like, how can we be understanding, and at the same time, how can, like, understand this is a person's experience, and at the same time, you know, still hold this responsibility like they can be doing more, right? And, like, it seems like a seeming contradiction, and so how do we really through this Torah perspective and through a psychological perspective, come to a way of being able to live with both.
Okay. Thank you. I have to say that one of the things, as a rabbi, one of the things that I spend a lot of time on is talking to people about psychologists, referring, going out. I am not a psychologist. I am married to a psychologist, and that's important for me to know, and for people to know. So I am sharing the halachic perspective and the Torah perspective. I am not the therapist here.
It's so hard to like not make a joke and say that he like knows his role and like where.
Okay, but when I was teaching in middle school, I have some of my students here. When I was teaching in middle school, one of the school psychologists there taught me a very, very important lesson, and it really comes from the Rambam. He would tell us over and over again that the key to unlocking growth for any person, he was saying about our students, but really any person, is mental health. Mental health gets in the way of growth in general, and it's so important for any type of growth, spiritual growth, professional growth, that mental health is a key component to unlocking all the potential that somebody has. And the Rambam really writes this explicitly in Shmona Prakim La Rambam. Shmona Prakim La Rambam is, Ari may remember learning this in high school, is the introduction to the Rambam on Pirkei Avos. He has 8 chapters. He writes different thoughts that he has, and he writes here the following, that if somebody's experiencing Mara Shechora, they didn't have a lot of terminology back then for any psychological ailments. So they called everything more or less one catch-all phrase, Mara Shechora, which like really means depression, Bizman Hazeh. That's like the, if you would, modern Hebrew, that would be depression. So if one is experiencing depression, the Rambam says you're responsible, obligated, to try to get out of that. Again, that's, we're going to talk about that, and that's really, that's not so simple to say, just get out of it. That's you know, people who are not educated in mental health just say, tell somebody, just get out of it, wake up, you know, snap out of it, go for a walk. That's nearly everything. So the Rambam says your job is to try to attempt to, you know, do things to change. He says, in his examples, in his day and age, it was listen to music, go for a walk, you know, look at, you know, big buildings, different things, go to a museum, try to, again, in his day, try to do things to get it. And he says, why? Why is this so important? He says, because the goal in life is to liknos chachma, is to get close to chachma, in his words, is Torah, get close to Hashem. And without addressing somebody's mental health issues, then how can we do that? We can try, but to really reach one's potential. And not only that, he says b'knias mamon too. He says in parnasa, in all different things, it is so important, so valuable to use whatever tools we have in our own personal toolbox, but also gain tools and learn from people around us, and when necessary, therapists, etc., medication if needed. It's important to get there, and the Rambam says this is really our responsibility. And just continuing on in sources 2 and 3, the Rav Schwab points out is that this wasn't a theme that we just created in the 20th century, where Freud created a little bit earlier than that, but Rav Schwab writes that there are languages in Tanakh that express the emotional or mental health of a person. He says, Lev Shomea, an understanding heart, a Lev Nishbar, Hamu Mei, Klaus Yotzos, there are different languages or expressions used in Tanakh that really express this. And we go on to the next page. You'll notice that we say this every single time in Shomrei Torah. We say the Mishnah Berurah Lecholim Monday, Thursday, and on Shabbos. And if you'll notice, I didn't notice this until Sarah's grandfather pointed this out to me, but if you look at it, right, Mishnah Berurah, we say Mishnah Berurah, what do we say? Refuas HaNefesh and Refuas HaGuf. What's Refuas HaNefesh? Refuas HaNefesh is our mental health. Refuas HaGuf is the physical ailments that we all know. But when we daven, right, we mention it at the forefront to tefillah, it's announced by, we say it out loud with the Gabbai. We should have those people in mind too. People that are suffering in silence, we should have those people in mind also. That's Refuas HaNefesh that we say. And I think it is important to notice, it is first. It's Refuas HaNefesh first, and then Refuas HaGuf. This is just my conjecture, but it could be Allah the Rambam that this is something that we don't focus on, and it's so important in our lives, and something that most people struggle with on some level throughout the course of their life. Now we're going to shift over to the halachic conundrums and issues that we address. Go on.
So we're going to go back and forth with just some basic questions, and I think there's so many more than this. This is really, we're not even going to answer all of them, but we are going to raise a number of issues. So first, this is the first one. So a child's recently been diagnosed with ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and literally can't sit and suffers from serious impulse control. And so if we know just some of the symptoms of this disorder, right, it's really about being able to like put the brakes on a person or on a child. And what that means, that could look like in terms of emotions, like emotional intensity. It could be like their thoughts are jumping around from one place to the next, right? So it could be impulse control and emotional control and the ability to like socially modulate themselves. And really it's manifest in all areas of life, okay? And the reality is that if a person has difficulty with impulse control, that's controlling themselves in the moment, so then even if you say to them, okay, please do this or whatever it is, like 5 minutes later, they're going to have difficulty in that moment unless you do a lot of things to deal with it. So what this looks like could be, so now you have a parent, right? How do they balance this child with the responsibility to educate their children about sitting in shul or at a Shabbos meal? What about when the child just ate meat and then they need ice cream 5 minutes later? And if the parent says no, then what if the child can hit or throw a tantrum and ruin the dynamic of the home? Obviously, you know, the child needs some help. And at the same time, there's a recognition that there are very significant challenges of how to deal with the moments, and how do we as a parent then say, okay, you better do this, and what happens when we're really demanding, and how does halacha take this into account?
I will add that some of these questions are actual real questions that we did receive, not the next one, but there are questions that we did really receive or had discussions with over the course of our time. Second, a parent who has been verbally or physically abusive throughout one's life. The spouse asks to cut off ties with the, with the children. Is there a mitzvah of kibud av v'aim in that situation? That's a serious mitzvah d'oraisa. It's the fifth commandment. What do you do in that situation? What if the parent passes away, and there's been such a difficult, corrosive relationship to the point where one of the children says, "I don't want to sit shiva." So does the child have an obligation to sit shiva if the parents have either been physically or verbally abusive this situation, because if they do sit Shiva, this may cause them even more further emotional and mental anguish by sitting there and, you know, saying things that maybe they don't want to say at the Shiva.
I think, like, also as just we're dealing with this, this common idea that's like jumping out at us, whether it's like on a clinical level, which we'll talk about, or just like the emotional experience, what's common to these questions is the power of emotions and the power of our thinking, right? And how that they really, in those moments, can feel very strong. And sometimes, even though it's not like a ruach ra'ah, like the way we understand it, can take over in certain moments. Okay, a young man experiences severe obsession, obsessive compulsive disorder, which manifests itself in tefillah. He cannot complete Shema without repetition, which could last more than an hour at a time. His psychologist would like him to recite prayers just one time, even if the pronunciation and or kavanah are halachically inappropriate, and to keep going after he finishes it. Is this acceptable? Again, just recognizing, I think on some level, when we said, do religion and psychology play for the same team? I think people here are probably, like, we're living in a time period where everyone's like, yeah. And I think that it's exceptionally more intricate, and the whole idea is a lot more intricate and can give us a lot of chizuk of how the Torah deals with it. Just keeping that in mind.
Great. Next. Spouse has been in a bad mood lately. They feel depressed. They have a hard time getting out of bed for minyan. The spouse keeps bringing it up because it's a value, right? Get up, come on, I set the alarm for you, push them out of bed. But it only makes him
You agreed
more
to
irritable.
This when we got married.
Right, this is the guy that I married, I want to have this. What should the wife do, right? He doesn't want it, right? He's feeling, you know, he's depressed, he doesn't have this. What's the dynamic in this relationship? I thought I married X, this is not the person that I married, and he's not who he was. What do we do? What do we suggest in this situation?
A young woman is experiencing postpartum depression, and the doctor says she can't have more children. This is a question of, should the woman be on birth control, depending on how many kids they have, and even if not, and just like a little, again, we can't go into every single one of these diagnoses, but when it comes to, it could be prepartum depression or postpartum depression, but the experience of having a child hormonally changes a person tremendously, and there's a lot of things that could put a person at risk, and it can be very dangerous, and it's different, and again, you know, these are not, what does it say, you know, seek your halachic, posik, or psychological consult, so, you know, this is just, again, bringing it up.
Okay, and in general, what do we tell people if emotions are interfering with their religious observance? Right, not because they don't like this mitzvah or they don't get it, but we tell people that try harder. You know, you're not in the mood. How much do we push people? How do we be more motivated? Be more consistent. Come on, like wake up. Right. Is it?
Yeah.
The Torah expects us to handle our lives. You know, how do we deal with that? Or do we acknowledge the presence of their challenges based on their internal experience and understand their behavior and say to them or to ourselves that you're doing the best you can and expect just that, right? And don't expect more. This is part of living, you know, and how do we, if somebody was had a physical ailment, maybe we wouldn't push them as much as something psychological. So how would we balance those two issues together?
Right. And I use the term a lot with, I work in Muncie. Like, you know, is it a get out of jail free card? Okay, so like you have this diagnosis and it makes it really difficult. So is this like a get out of jail free card? Do you always have responsibility? Like, how does this play out? And again, right, I think it's so important to think of like a community context. As we think about a psychological perspective, first of all, does anyone have any thoughts about any of these halachic discussions, anything that came up, anything that they want to share, any other questions that they think might be, or points that might be important just when we think about questions? Okay. I was just talking to my mom, and she's like, is it going to be interactive? I'm like, probably not. which also speaks to our next point, right? You know, do we check in the same way when we know someone's emotionally going through a difficult time? Right? Or we know someone's spouse or someone's child. Are we checking in the same way when we find out someone physically hurt themselves that they're doing okay?
No. If they've shared, and I'm willing to they seem to be upset over something. You can ask them, would you like to talk, but you can't really ask any specific questions.
So that brings up a really meaningful point, right? With the challenge of any mental health and emotional health chat, like anything in that realm, we can't see it. Sometimes you can see it, right? But very often you can't see it. You might notice certain things or certain behaviors, but it's much harder to see, right? And also, their people are private. You have a lot of people who are private in general. Okay, I've heard people are private. Right? But there are people who are private, and when it comes to, you know, it will play out in all areas of life. Just as a survey, how many people think that maybe beyond just the issue of privacy, people who have any issues with emotional mental health challenges are more private about it, not because they're private in general about everything? Do you think that's true? I think that is true, right? So it speaks about the stigma that we have. And when we think about stigma, the Jewish community probably is like, as if there's a stigma in general about like emotional and mental health, and within the community, as we're like more insular, so it's even more so. And even if it wasn't true, there's still a tremendous stigma about mental health, and it's about what a person looks like, and there's an internalized process of shame that happens, and within the community, and it's very hard. So how do we break that, and like how do we see a perspective that's different so that we can get to a point where the same way, right, we know the same way that we can check in with a person about physical, we could also check in about emotional, and I think it just speaks to emotional health is taboo. So I will say this is a sad, that's a judgment, but the definitions that I'm using, not my best, but a little bit of time sensitive. Mental health, we know what mental health is in general. The reason why I want to bring in mental health and mental illness is because there is a spectrum approach to emotions and mental health, right? Very often, people think about pathology as like, that's it. Either people like are emotionally like they're good or they're not good. It's like, yes or no, check the box. But really, it's so much more complex. And the emotional experience and our thinking and how the urges we have to act and how we act, right, that's on a spectrum. And therefore, right, when we think about what ends up becoming, so what is like an illness versus not, and is there a value to like taking care of like everything and talking about it, right? Like what becomes, like when is it something considered an illness or like a mental health challenge? I guess on the one hand, I just want to say like the reason why I'm bringing this up is so important because mental illness, on the one hand, it bothers me that term. Is anyone else bothered by like mental illness? No, just me. Okay, I'm a lone soldier. I'm okay, guys. I'm okay. I think the reason why it bothers me is because it's so pathological, right? It's so pathological. Oh, yeah. If you look at the end, which we're not going to go through, the amount, the prevalence of mental health disorders are so significant that almost like it's very likely that most people in their lifetime will experience a mental health disorder. And so it's something that's just like so much a part. If you look at Tanakh and the characters, so many people have dealt with adversity, so many of the figures that we look at. And so it's so much a part of life, and yet when we call it an illness, it seems like it's like you have like, okay, regular healthy emotions, and then like not healthy emotions. And all emotions are healthy, right? Yeah. Like all emotions are healthy. It's the challenge really is when we're not functioning because of our emotional experience or the thoughts we have, right? That all of a sudden it's either causing us a lot of emotional distress, or we're just not functioning. And so it sends that message. On the other hand, the reason why it's beneficial to like call it an illness is because it really gives a mashmas, it gives something concrete to say, no, it's real. And a person is in a lot of distress, and it's not as easy as my husband was saying, like, you know, in the question, right? Just, you know, kind of suck it up and like push yourself, and you could do better. And like, if you just tried harder, and if I just loved you a little bit more, then things would be different, right? And I think, and even, you know, with the kid and adult alike, it's for ourselves and for the other person in our lives. If we don't understand both of these, the fact that emotions are just, it's part of life, and that it can get to a point, or even when it's not pathological, right? Have you ever Have you ever yelled at someone and you didn't mean to, and maybe that was not the most effective thing to do? And you could be everyone here. I don't know. I have had times, apologize, that I have lost my cool and have not been in my ideal self. And it's just in that moment, and I'm not proud of it at the same time, right? If I don't acknowledge that and what was going on for me, then, right, we say, name it to tame it. If you don't acknowledge it, if you don't recognize the challenges of my emotions or even give it a label on the experience, I won't be able to deal with it. And it's not something to feel ashamed of, right? That there's it's very complex. Point two, right? Biological bases, neuro, right? Is it something that's biological? So there's a lot of saying that it is. And does every single brain scan look different? I'm not sure. And at the same time, even if it did and people's brains look different, we do believe, God bless you, in neuroplasticity, that the brain can change. And there's so much, my brain, right? I have my executive functioning in certain areas. It's not great. So I always have alarms going off. Otherwise, I will not remember to do things. So I remind myself.
One's
going to
go off during this class, I'm telling you. Yeah.
There for sure will be one that will go off. And even though I set an alarm, it's not enough, because I need to say explicitly on the alarm what it's reminding me to do, because otherwise it'll be like an alarm, and I'm like, that's cool. Right? Like, I have no clue. And so, there's a part of me, my brain is going to be different, and there's so much that I've acknowledged it, and that, oh, wow, there's so much that you can do in order to be mindful. So, just to make the final point about, psychology, and just a very superficial overview of a little bit about mental health and the value of psychology. So the question becomes, looking at those Shilohs, is there a difference between just someone who's just emotions and thoughts are not as helpful and someone who's pathological? Any thoughts? Yeah.
Perfect. I don't remember the story. That's why. Perfect segue into the next section.
But
so
hold on.
Oh, yeah, finish going.
Is that it? Yeah. I think everything you're saying, I think that's the goal of this. That's why my last point is very a little bit abstract, but also not. It's really developing a sense of flexibility in our thinking and recognizing if we don't have flexibility, then the rigidity in either direction can really be problematic, and that itself is, even though rigidity sometimes can be pathological, and sometimes just our rigidity, sometimes it's great, right? It's great to be passionate and for the sake of a cause, and then sometimes we're so rigid and you're like, okay, you know, everyone, no one's going to be in shul anymore. Stop yelling. You know what I mean? Like I'm saying, but you still need, there's so much, you still need a little bit of both. And I think that just like the last point I do want to say that there is like to recognize that when it is at a certain level, it's exhausting to be a person when like the, like an emotional health challenge is going on. It's so hard to be the person living through it. It's also so hard to be the family members living through it. It's exhausting on so many levels and it's real. And it could be exhausting on so many levels and it's not officially pathological. Like emotions, we say like, I ask my patients in the intensive outpatient program, one of the things we talk about is like, if you could either, it's either or, which is really not true, right? But either you could have emotions and like have the plethora of emotions, or like you could live without emotions, what would you choose, right? And invariably we have a very meaningful conversation, and I just want to bring that up, I'm not going to go anywhere with it, is to recognize that there's a risk and it makes us, we put ourselves out there, and it's a lot of, when you're willing to have emotions, right, it's just, it's a lot sometimes, and so, just, you know, kind of putting that out there. I just want to say that, though, so there are differences, and at the same time, you see that they both impact our internal experience in different areas of life, and religious observance and functioning, regardless of, like, what happens. Emotions can get in the way, and how we think, right, a rigid thinking, all or nothing can get in the way. And it's very meaningful, I just want to end with this, and then we're going to see the Torah perspective. It's very meaningful to understand and validate the internal experience of ourselves and the other person and the expectations and the way they react in the moment and for the future may need to be modified, right? And like it's not like a definitive thing, but it's really the ability to truly understand where a person's coming from. So, you know, while you said, Maxine, that like you can't necessarily see it, I think that we should strive to understand and recognize that it's coming from somewhere. No one's just like haphazardly. And again, either there's a reason behind it or it's, you know, their brain is working a certain way. It's just like, whatever, kind of, you know, oops, I didn't mean to punch you, right? Whatever. Like, and again, and that is important to understand also because then you don't personalize it, right? So just, okay. So much to say in a nutshell.
Okay, let me give some examples from halacha. Starting with Gemara Rishonim, Piskei Halacha Bizman Hazeh, to really highlight that the tension, but also how Halacha does acknowledge in a very, very real way that mental illness is an illness in many different ways. So just, we'll go through some of the sources. It's funny that Maxine, you mentioned somebody that was blind. So the Gemara, the first source, mentioned a woman that is in labor. So we assume that a woman is in labor, it's pikuach nefesh, and you can drive to the hospital, right? Not a question. Call an ambulance. It's not Shabbos for that woman because you need to get her to a place. She's in a level of sekanas nefesh. So the Gemara says on that, the Gemara says, oh, you know what you could do? You could light a candle. Again, no electricity back then, but you can light a candle. Lighting a candle, right, on Shabbos is havara, one of the third malachos. You can light a candle for her, right? You need to see to deliver the baby. So the Gemara says, what's the chiddush of the Gemara? You need to see that. So if it's to deliver the baby, that's obvious, right? So the Gemara says, that's not what you're learning here. So it's for the woman. It's for the woman. If she needs it, you can violate Shabbos. What's the issue here? So says the Gemara, what's the answer? It's dealing with a woman that is blind, that doesn't need light. But she wants there to be more light in the room because she's nervous herself. The whole goal is here, Yishuv Hadas, for her to appease her mental and emotional health, that she knows that she feels that she's a little bit more control if there is more light in the room. So there you can violate one of the three malachos, right? Not a question, for Yishuv Hadas, for the mental health of this individual during the situation. Continues the Gemara in Shabbos. We say this every single Friday night in Bamei Medlikin, that you're allowed to blow out a candle. Lighting a candle, blowing out a candle is also a malacha deraisa of kiboy. Why? They have a list. Mipnei ha-listim, if you're afraid that, you know, robbers are going to come into your house and, God forbid, ransack the house and even more, you can go ahead and blow out the candle. Number two, mipnei ruach ra'a. What is ruach ra'a? Rashi, the Rambam, both explain that ruach ra'a means somebody that is overtaken by something. Again, the Gemara didn't have language for, right? They thought it was an evil spirit or something, right? But Ruach Ra, what?
So we could think like now, like irrational thoughts.
Irrational thoughts. Illusion. Something overtook them. They have some type of psychosis. They are not themselves who they are. They're experiencing something, some type of mental illness. And to appease them on some level, they need the light out. They need the light out. So says the Gemara, you can blow out the candle. You can blow out the candle. It's mutter. Says the Ramban, the next source. The Ramban, I wrote Shut Rashba, which is one of the chuvas of the Rashba. Just as a historical point, is that if you go to this firm store today, you want to buy the chuvas of the Ramban, they don't exist. They do exist, but they don't exist. Why? Because the cover says Shut, the chuvas of the Rashba. Somehow, some way, there was like a printer's error way back when, and the chuvos, one set of chuvos of the Rashba, are really belong to the Ramban. They're called Shud HaRashba, Miyuchasos LeRamban. The Rashba was a Talmud of the Ramban, so he quotes a chuva here. The Ramban says, you see from these two Gemaras that number one, somebody experiencing psychoses, right, you can violate Shabbos for them. But not only that, he feels that when one experiences a mental health issue, that becomes on Shabbos a suffix sakana. If that's a suffix sakana situation, right, one's allowed to violate Shabbos for a suffix sakana. Not only for a vadai, for sure sakana. If one is not sure, if a woman's not sure if she's in labor, she's not sure, what do you do? Get over to the hospital, right? Suffix sakana. So he says that in this situation, right, you learn, he puts these two gemaras together, he paskins halacha l'maisa, that it's a suffix sakana situation. So turn the page. The Nishmas Avram, Avram Steinberg, is probably the leading rabbinic authority today on medicine and halacha. He has a, it's in English, it's a 3-volume work. In Hebrew, it's a 6-volume work. I think they left some of the stuff out. Avram Steinberg, he speaks English also from Eretz Israel. He has a sefer on all of Shulchan Aruch, only addressing medical issues, and he constantly updates it. You can find it online at HebrewBooks.org. He writes here regarding Shabbos, about a chola psychiatry, right? Psychiatry. Mibichinas chil Shabbos, ein kol havdel bin chola mimachala gufani, mechola imachala nafshit. There's no difference in halacha whether somebody's experiencing a physical ailment or one is experiencing a mental ailment. What? I think 15, 20 years ago? Yeah, right? I've met him. He comes to RCA conventions very often. And very, very clearly, there is no difference in halacha between a machala gufanit and a machala nafshit. There's no difference. In fact, this is fascinating. I was looking through other areas we discussed the psychiatric ailments, and he writes that if somebody overcomes one, right, he says that they would make a birchas hagomel in shul, right? Again, talking about stigma, that Sarah spoke about stigma in a community, would someone feel comfortable with that? Right? Maybe we want to create a community where people would feel comfortable with saying a gomel, maybe not in public, maybe just with 10 men on the side, but again, ad kidei kach, that there would be a gomel being said for that.
I just point out also, is like it's going to lead into the next point, is that...
You can quote this one, you like the source, go ahead.
You could quote it, but I think that getting the ability to like strive to be able to say it in shul, we also know it's going to come up in the next source, how important it is to have social support to work through this. And again, think about it. When a person is dealing with a physical ailment, so often you get medication, a person can have a round of chemo. It's something external to them, right? Here it's like, oh, you're having internal issues and you have to fix it. It's like the nature of the challenge is like what's meant to fix it. Like the challenge is the refuah. That's like a really difficult level. And I'm saying people are amazing because people are able to do that. Just think about though how valuable it is to have other people who encourage it and are saying like, you can do it, like you can get through this. We know how important it is in physical health, and it's equally important in emotional health. I am clearly biased because I work a lot in a group environment, and I see how meaningful it is. It is so incredible. Yeah, it's hard because then they bring in, oh, this is my challenge, whatever. Okay, everyone has challenges. You'll get over the exposure, like the amount of chizuk that comes from like a group of people who get it, right, to have like a conversation where a lot of parents are talking, oh, this is really hard for me, or kids are talking like, you know, this is my parent, it's so hard for me, or we have physical issues and it's impacting me emotionally, or whatever it is, like wherever you could get that, it's so incredible. And here, I think the source is so beautiful.
Yeah, it's a piece for Rav Kook. The Gemara says that three people need shimur, need to have a shomer. So we know a chas and a kala, the day of their wedding, right? Who's the shomer, right? Who's the shomer? But also, Gemara says, shlosha tzrichon shimur, a chole, a chas and a kala, right? I think instinctively in our communities, right, we have chesed 24/7 that now does this, ensures that people are always with people that are chole and don't have family members, where family members need to take breaks. We have Baruch Hashem in our community, Burton County. We have shomer, we have this. But Rav Kook says, what this is so beautiful. What's the holy idea? It's what Sarah said. It's about hachzaras hateva ha'adam le'ayde re'osef. It's social support. Why does a chole need a shomer, need somebody with them? Not only for physical ailments, someone's going through it, you need that person to help them, but social support to get through emotional and mental illnesses on whatever level and every, you know, whatever scale one is at is so, it's invaluable to the support. Rabbi Soloveitchik talks about the value of a community. And he writes, the value of a community is bringing people together. It's really bringing people together, and how important that is, right, to help and uplift each and every single person in the community itself. That's Rav Kook said. Yeah, go ahead.
I also just want to say that I think, even though I speak about a dialectic, and like you can have two opposing experiences at the same time, like that can coexist, and it's not one or the other. I think we're focusing a little bit more tonight on how to validate and understand like the real nature of like the emotional experience and having the rational thoughts and having a hard day and you know, wanting to act in a way or acting in a way that's like you're not so proud of or is challenging. And I think that like we rely more heavily, we're focusing more heavily on that because it is so hard and it is something that like people struggle with in a very real way, and it's very difficult, and we don't talk about it enough, and like we don't have a community around it enough, and it's so lonely. It's a very lonely experience, and there's even shame in reaching out and asking. And I think not only are we fear, like I think the stigma from the outside, but I think again this internalized stigma, this internalized shame, where we're pretty critical of ourselves for not being able to be better and to work on it, and why are we still dealing with something? And it's hard, right? Because I don't know about you, but when someone's, you know, they always have like if someone's on a diet, they're like, you know, you're so like, I don't know, I don't find that like very meaningful. You're so fat, you're like, you know, or like you're really, really not functioning in life. So the critical voice that's telling you, like, you know, do better, like, get, like, you could, like, you know, the mean voice. Like, I don't find that is so motivating. I mean, maybe I don't know. Like, I don't know if anyone finds that motivating. And again, like, you know, I could imagine there's like a wide range of people, and some people will find that. I think in a relentless way. I don't think ultimately that builds people. I think it breaks people down. And so this outside stigma, like that we can't reach out, this lonely feeling that we have, and this like shame and this critical voice that we have towards ourselves, I think makes it just a really difficult, even if it's not on the level of a pathology, it just makes our experiences when we feel irrational, when we're just hormonal, and we're just acting in a certain way. It's so hard. It's hard to reach out. It's hard to even reach out to friends. You know, Baruch Hashem, hopefully people are blessed with good friends, or recognize it's important to cultivate, you know, friendship so that you have that. And at the same time, it's a true struggle. And that's why I think we focus a little bit more on understanding the essence of it and the ability to validate and really give like space for it. And also at the same time, you know, still have a sense of responsibility that we do want to grow, and we can, and have hope that we can actually get through this. And there's another side. Yeah.
Never understood why. So finally,
And I appreciate that you asked, right? Like I'm saying, I think that that's like very meaningful that you asked. And usually what could happen, and I think this is a side point, is we are very relational people. You get people who are like, I like being around others, I don't. In the end of the day, we really, like, connection is very meaningful to us. And a lot of, like, our challenges have to do with how we relate, our expectations for relationships, what we want, what we don't want, what we do communicate, what we don't communicate, right? Like, we're really relational people. And so, very often, if we don't know what's going on for the other person, if we don't ask, right, they will do something for us and we'll be like, forget it. Like, I don't need them. I don't, right? Because we're protecting ourselves. We don't understand it. And so we end up reacting to something because we're just jumping to conclusions, or even not. Like, they hurt us, and they, even if they didn't intend to, you know, we don't slow down. And so it's like a, you know, this happened, then that happened. And usually when you, like, break it down, it's like you really understand, like, oh, this person, you know, they said that because they're coming from this place, and they're, you know, very often, it's very rare that you're like, I have no idea why they did that. And then you're just like, okay, you know, you're just emotional, right? Says my husband, who lives with 6 women.
Okay. There's one source over here, last source, but there's a lot of tshuvos written about different issues regarding mental health. I'll just throw it out there, where Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about a woman who is suffering postpartum depression. And there are two questions that were asked. One was, can she go on, the doctors wanted to go on birth control. I don't know all the details of why there was a shot the other way. Again, this is in the 60s and 70s, where there was very little knowledge as to what exactly this was. He said, if the doctors say that's what she needs, then that's what she should go on. Then there was a follow-up question in that tshuva, where there was a concern that if she would fast an entire day, then it may trigger the depression again. That's what the doctors felt. Can she eat on Yom Kippur? And he said, yes. In very succinct language, he said yes. Rav Asher Weiss, we're going to read a tshuva from the Michal Sasha right now. I've had the privilege to discuss with him different tshuvas over different shilas throughout my years. He has two tshuvas on OCD. To my knowledge, this is the only tshuvas that are now around on OCD. And he was asked the following question, and I go back to my days in YU. I had everyone who learns the base medrash in YU gets their own makom. It's a little bit competitive how you get your spot, but I sat in the spot, and every single night at Maariv, somebody who lived in the community would come sit next to me, and he would daven Maariv there. His Shema took at least 15 minutes. It took at least 15 minutes. It's a halacha. You should say every single word of Shema very, very carefully. It's halacha. We just learned it. In between Mincha Maariv, you should be medaktik on the osios of Shema. To mitzvah d'oraisa. But, you know...
And.
What?
Is it and?
Oh, and. There's a concern here. Yael Mayevsky is going to talk about OCD specifically in a few weeks from now. But this is, you know, what's the halacha? So somebody was at... Russia Weiss was asked to Shaila about OCD. What do you do? The doctor wants this guy to just do it once. And what's the concern? So there's several different concerns. One concern was if he's saying Kiddush for his family. Again, just imagine. The father is suffering from OCD. Right? He can't, his Kiddush takes a half hour. Right? What are the kids are suffering through the Shabbos table? What do you do? And then he says...
And also, yeah. The person really thinks that it's right.
Right. And in his mind, the OCD of him is saying, I'm doing Ratzon Hashem. Right? I'm doing what Hashem wants me to do.
You're just very lax. And, like, you don't care enough, so you're not doing it. But, like, this is what's MS. And, like, okay, so you're just not on my level.
OCD also does play itself out from time to time with women and mikvah issues as well. So what do you do in, these situations? So Rosh Weiss... is very, very clear. And the other issue is that you can't make, if you don't make the bracha the right way, how can you eat, right? How can you, what about benching? Like, what do you do in these situations? So he said that the following. He says we have a halacha when it comes to Shabbos, that we want to be violate Shabbos to save a life, because there's an end game here, right? We're talking about end game, the goal. What's the goal? The goal is for the person to keep many more Shabbosos in the future. It's not just about the here and now, right now. It's about the end game. So he's thinking about right now. So Rashi Weiss says, because of that halacha, he feels that you could apply this halacha to OCD. And what the doctor recommended is exactly what should be done. The person should say it once, whether he technically was yotze with all the kavana and said the words correctly or not, it does not make a difference. He should just say it once because that's what the doctor recommends, is a treatment for this individual, and then he should go on and, you know, and eat whatever, or say Shema and Shemona Esrei, whatever it might be, his situation, and that's okay. When it comes to Kiddush, he actually, just like, you have to understand the halacha, right? You have to appreciate the halacha. When it comes to Kiddush, he says that to be yotze motzi other people, maybe not so. Maybe not so. And he either suggests that his wife should say Kiddush for the family, right, in the situation, right? Or everybody should say Kiddush along with the father, right? So everybody's saying it. You're not embarrassing that. Maybe it's embarrassing that he's going to ask his wife to do it, right? So maybe everybody along with the husband to say Kiddush, and this way you're acknowledging what's going on, the reality, but also acknowledging this. Another shiur from Rashi Weiss, he is quoted in an article in a Vayu Torah shiur. I heard this from him explicitly. He was asked about anorexia. Young girl is suffering from anorexia. He said he gets this question too many times to count. A young girl is suffering from anorexia, and the treatment plan is she has to eat regular every single day. If she loses a day, it can trigger, you know, and go back, and you can lose years and months of treatments. He paskins very clearly that in this situation, a girl should eat karagil. Whatever the doctor says, a girl should do. Not a question. Not a question. This is a man with very broad shoulders who is a giant in Torah. He says very clearly that's what you have to do. We're here for the long game, we're not here for the right now, right? Chalel Shabbos Achas, Kadei Sheyishmor, Shabbos is Harbe. Again, plates stuff out in many, many different areas.
I just want to say two points about that. So thank you very much. That was beautiful. I think these sources are so meaningful. One is like you said before, we need to keep, like, what are our goals in mind, like, that we want to be in Ovid Hashem. Like, keep it in mind, like, where we want to go in any moment as to, like, what is going to help us get through the moment. I also want to say again, speaking to, here he spoke about, like, a tshuva about OCD, you know, the opposite, where we're saying, like, do things one time, right, and, like, don't think as much, and don't get as, like, stuck in your thoughts. When it comes, let's say, to someone who has more impulsivity, you're like, slow down, think more, right? And I think we have to appreciate that depression and anxiety and ADHD and, you know, schizophrenia, every single type of, and trauma work and just, you know, difficulties with their relationships, that there's different types of treatments. And what, like, they could literally be, like, what is meaningful for one is, like, really counterproductive in a different one, and which is why I think what we appreciate from the halachic perspective, first of all, it is so intricate, and even though it was before, like, hundreds of years before our time, and at the same time, I think it's important to recognize, like, the nuances, and that, like, you know, treatment can be different, and halachic poskim and, like, rabbanim and psychologists and mental health professionals and people, like, there really is a close consult in terms of, like, understanding, like, what is meaningful and you know, what would really not be beneficial in moving forward. Anyone have, before we, like, you know, any questions, any, yeah. You could say anything
then else. I think there's from just the post-kid that I spoke to, there was a misunderstanding of what it was, right? What it comes to. There's a misunderstanding of what went into somebody that wants to take their own life. So that's where Chazal come from. And Bizman Hazeh, we bury regular in a cemetery, and they get a Jewish burial, 100%.
What do you mean it was a misconception?
And sitting Shiva too, yeah, 100%.
But I think all of it, I think the misconception is, you know, as like, I think that, like, Dr. Pelkovitz had a beautiful talk recently just about like suicidal ideation and thinking about suicidality, that it's like really a biological basis to it. And there's certain people who, when they feel like very hopeless, that's where their thought goes. Like, I can't deal with life. It's like, it does make sense. And there's like a very high number of people who will have those thoughts. And like a thought is just a thought. I think that's also the godless of all this, because even though we understand like what a person's experiences are, and we say like we have to keep like that into take that into account, in the end of the day, a thought is just a thought, and a feeling is a feeling, and an urge is an urge, and we don't have to act on it. However, when we are in a place and we are like in the experience, and a person is feeling like they, you know, they can't live anymore, and they have suicidal ideation, and they want to like end it, right? It's so understandable that they are not making a calculated decision. This is not a decision that's coming from health. It's a decision that's coming from pain and emotional distress and emotionally not being, right? It's a real illness. And I think it's important to understand that. And while we understand, and then I think that's where it comes from, is that like we acknowledge it. And I think I work with a lot of women in the intensive outpatient program where like you could acknowledge, like, so sometimes like medication helps a lot. And at the same time, like, it is just a thought and we don't have to act on it. And there are things that we could do. And if we could get through that moment, right? I think if we can, we have moments, and I think it comes down to this. We all have emotions and irrational beliefs, or just a thinking pattern. Right? We could be not flexible, and we could have an urge. And if we give into it in the moment, so sometimes it's really like we're not in a place where we're stronger, and we really can't. And there's something that we believe in these moments, right? Our goal is like, can we get through these moments without acting in a way that's making it worse? And I will say halacha. What's amazing about the halachos that Andrew, that he quoted, and that like we were talking about together, is that it recognizes in advance that like certain people are going to have certain challenges. How are we going to make sure that, you know, that this person who's more vulnerable, how do we acknowledge it and take that into account and like try and modify the situation so that they can succeed? And at the same time, right, like if they do, you know, give into a moment, like we recognize that this is a dialectic that we hold on to all the time. People are doing the best they can, and we can be doing better and doing more in the moment, right? I am Sameach Bechelko, and I'm supposed to be like doing better, right? I'm like happy with what I have, and this is my like circumstances, and I want more, and I want to grow, and I want to do better. How can they coexist? They are literally contradictory. And the Torah wants both of us at all times, right? And I think that, does anyone have, I think like we probably understand that they can coexist, and that as human beings, we have multiple experiences and competing demands at the same time. And I think that like on the one hand, we're trying to be understanding, right? That this is the best the person can be doing, and not personalize it and not do something. The Torah tries to be effective, like what's going to like help this person get through the moment, not make it worse, and eventually aim for them to do better in life, right? And I think that's very powerful that that's what the halacha is doing, because that is how we should approach our own emotional and mental well-being and health, right? That we should recognize, what do we really care about? We care about this person, you know, we care about ourselves, we want to grow and be connected to Hashem, right? How do we get through these moments? I don't want to make it worse. I'm not going to beat myself up if I do make a mistake or be critical of someone else. And like I acknowledge, like I want to do better, and I could do both, right? And I want to set myself up for success. I want to notice those things that you know are going. I don't know if that like you know. Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I'm thinking of you, I'm sorry for your time, and it would give them the opportunity to then either want to talk.
Right. So that's, I really appreciate that point. And at the end of this, we have things like things to say and things not to say. like that you can say to someone who's going through a hard time. I think that we live in a time of texting and sending emails, and I would say it goes beyond even doing it one time. And unless they like explicitly say, please don't contact me. And even then, I don't know, like if I would, you want to be respectful and you don't want to be intrusive, and you want someone to know that you're there. And very often, and I can't say this myself, right? Like this week I wasn't feeling well and I was sick, and there's so many times that I want to be able to check in and take care of certain things and I can't. And sometimes we feel like, oh my God, I feel so bad and I feel so guilty, I didn't do it. And then we don't reach out. People say this a lot of times if someone is sick or like after a velos and they didn't have a chance to go and they're so, you know, they feel so much guilt that it actually, as opposed to making like that emotion, as opposed to like fostering, you know, I'll reach out more, there's a sense of shame, and then they reach out less and they're more isolated or they don't reach out. And that's like really counter what they wanted, which is to show this person that they care. So yeah, you're embarrassed anyway. So you may as well just like let them know, like, I'm sorry I couldn't come, or like, I do care, or whatever it is. Like, it's very meaningful, you know, to kind of like let that. So I really appreciate that.
How do you deal with those on getting back to the suicide issue? There are certain occupations, specifically police, that in recent times seem to have a very high percentage that's increasing in suicide. Now, we know it's related to their occupation, but it's very difficult, unless you're another cop, to relate.
Right. I think it's, you know, I think there's so, like, suicide, like that whole notion of suicidal ideation, and we do know that I'm just going to say a side point, and you could go like there's like there's suicide like a crisis hotline, and then there's ways that you could deal with it. We do know that obviously like any of the stigma, that any of the things that we do that like we say like you should be fine, if a person asks someone like, oh, are you feeling like, we don't say you want to kill yourself, but you say like, do you feel like you want to harm yourself? People think like I'm introducing this thought. If a person didn't have a thought of suicidal ideation, then you're not introducing it. There's like, that's a myth, right? At the same time, I think it's very hard to understand that, like where a person's coming from, but we can try and listen and say like, I want to understand, and like get people who are involved. And we also know that when it becomes something that other people are doing, and we know that police live under a lot of, you know, stress, and there's like the stigma now within that. And we live in a world where, you know, imagine, you know, being the good guy and being a bad guy, right? So like it's very challenging, and we can understand stressors. And I think also like, we understand, like, there's like, if a person is sick for 20 years, 30 years, or mental health or physical health or whatever, like, we get, I say, like, I have even some younger people who have been like, I've been dealing with this for so long. Like, it's so effortful. I want to stop having so much effort, right? And you get that, except what we know is that in that moment, they feel like they want to give up, but tomorrow, they're going to have hope again. And so we don't want them to make a decision in the short term that's going to impact the long term. And so we want to help them get through that moment, because emotions are fleeting. We always say emotions don't last forever, right? And so we want to be sensitive to them and also recognize that it won't be, whatever we feel like a distress that's going to last forever, if you break it down, it just doesn't. Except that we acknowledge it is really hard. And there's ways to, like, you know, that's why you have, like, you know, there are ways to actually, I've seen it myself, amazing to see the resiliency of people and, like, really get through, you know, significant challenges over the course that they've been dealing with it for 10 years, and then, like, really, you know, maintain change. And initially it's, like, functioning, and then, like, and they're like, you said that if I start working and I do this, and, like, eventually you're going to feel different. And I'm like, oh gosh, I really hope so. And eventually, like over the course of time, they do, because it's about, like we said, what is like an illness? It's characterized by like the impact on functioning, how long, the intensity, the frequency, the duration, right? I say the idea, intensity, duration, and the frequency. Yeah.
So I'm saying, on the point, when you're saying that sometimes you could encourage them, you're right, that you might not be able to relate to them because they're a cop, you don't know what he's going through, what he's seeing. But if you can encourage them, to a fellow colleague, I work in a hospital every afternoon, really there are meetings at the end of the day to debrief with the colleagues, just because we know what we're going through, we see, we hear, so even if it's 15 minutes at the end of the day, might not be realistic or fit to encourage whoever it is to debrief with somebody else who might understand him. Could be helpful.
I think also, like, it's acknowledging, this is what we're saying here, right? The Torah does this, we want to do this also. Make space for the emotional experience. Acknowledge it. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's they have to, like, recognize it and give space and deal with it and not just deny it and push it away, because we deny it and push it away, you know, kind of comes back in full force. And it's hard. It's not an easy thing. Yeah. So I think that's a great example. And I also just want to highlight, like, I think this is what we're talking, there's a lot of times, like, it's not necessarily, it's not pathology, but, like, very all or nothing thinking. Like, there are a lot of people in the world who are just more comfortable to be in, like, the extreme of things. It's, like, clear, right? And we don't like to, like, have a lack of clarity, or, so it's, like, do it the right way, and do it this way, and do it that way, and, like, this is part of a personality type. And I think that that speaks to you know, our experiences. Like, you have certain people, like, they're just born with a certain disposition. You see it. If you've ever seen a little kid from, like, the, you know, and then maybe you'll see two of them together and three of them, and maybe of your own, if people are, like, blessed with that or not, maybe they see it in other people, like, you're just like, whoa, you are born different, right? You're kind of, like, a little bit more, you know, rigid, and you're a little bit, you're, like, super laid back about things, but then randomly you'll blow up, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, you see it, and then, like, life happens. And so when it's not as, right, we even say black and white, and yet at the same time, it's leading to resentment or issues. And I think that's what we're also talking about. Like, you know, how do spouses communicate with each other? Like, keep an open communication. Try and understand where that person's coming from. We always just assume, as you said, we're just assuming, like, oh, you care so much about halacha. And that's true. You can care so much about halacha and look at the consequences. Right? So even though someone has, like, OCD and it's very clear what the consequences are, the kids are, like, throwing everything, breaking things, 30 minutes they have to wait, like, that's the extreme that, like, helps us illustrate the point. But the reality is, like, if I am, like, it better be a certain way before Shabbos, you know, you do this, and, like, I'm, like, not even, so, you know, like, one, that's not, you have competing goals, because you want, like, a peaceful home, you know, before Shabbos, and you want it to look ready for Shabbos. So now what, right? And, like, where does, like, how do people communicate about this and recognize it's not black and white, right? It's, you know, I don't know if that's what you were kind of asking about. And then, like, I think halachos.
Whereas if there is some sort of acceptance of, like, yeah, you're a human being, you can't possibly do all of these things, you know, and that's okay to be that and be who you are and have some shortcomings, say, I can do this much, right? Like, it's sort of, it always is portrayed as less than ideal, and I wonder if there are philosophic bases for saying it's not less than ideal, you just your best, and that's okay.
So, I'll give you a few different examples of where this, I think, plays itself out in general. I think Pesach cleaning is a great example where there's a lot of guilt and a lot of, like, high expectations. And realistically, like, my family members, not Sarah, but don't trust, like, no, you really don't have to clean the ceiling. You don't have to. No, I don't believe you. You know, like, there's like this this very high expectation, whether it comes from school, yeshiva, the community, I'm not sure, but there's like this very, but I think the more that we learn, right, the more that we understand that halacha in many areas is like a spectrum of opinions. My students can tell you that are here, in kashrus also is an example where like I'll tell a woman, she'll call me up, and she'll say, men call me too for kashrus, great question, but most often it's women are calling me for the shaylas. And I'll say, the soup's kosher. No, I'm throwing out the soup. No, I want to know about the bowl that I put, whatever, the ladle. I'm throwing out, the soup's really kosher. It's fine, right? But people have these like standards, expectations, right, that are maybe go above and beyond what they need in some of those areas. Parenting children also, I think, is difficult. How do we know when to push, right? If I see a child, right? All my children are below bar mitzvah, right? So what do I do? They're biting their nails. Do I say something? Do I not say something? What's it, at that point, right? For a chinuch approach to that, waiting between milk and meat, you know? What do we do in situations where like there's no objective right now? Or even if there is, do we lie? Do we say, no, okay, you ate at 1 o'clock, you finished at 1 o'clock, and it's seven, you're fine, even though like, you know. So there is a lot of gray in that area, but I think part of it is either not being afraid or not being embarrassed to ask questions, whether personally about one's family. And the more that we know within halacha, the more that I think we can appreciate this. I think the knowledge is power in terms of this, not to paskin on your own, right? I ask shaylos all the time to my rebbeim, but to not afraid to foster and have conversations that address these needs. Because I think there is a lot out there. I think there's a lot within the framework of halacha that acknowledges that we're all on the spectrum in terms of growth. That we're all not perfect, but we all want to grow. We all want to get there. And again, I have certain kochos and you have certain kochos. We want to get to a certain point, and we have to. Halacha, I believe, acknowledges that gray. It's hard to. It's not discussed in the poskim. It's not. Why? Because the extremes are objective and very clear. The middles are all based on the personal relationship that one has, and knowledge of the whole assessment of the situation, and then you can figure it out.
I will say, like, I think you're bringing up a meaningful point. The way I understand it also is that, like, it sounds like it's not lechachila. It's like b'diavad. Like, if you're gonna not be a perfectionist and like aspire in all these ways, like, you're a b'diavad Jew, like, that's okay, right? And I think what you're saying is like, no, the more you know, the more you realize it's lechachila, like, it's impossible to do certain things. And if you're a perfectionist at the cost of somebody else, you are doing something else that's against halacha, right? I think...
Yes, what I tell other people is that it's lechachila for you, right? It's lechachila for you, right? People shouldn't feel like they're b'diavad Jews. Like, oh, the rabbi said this is kosher for you, but not... No, this is lechachila for you, where you are. I know you. I love you. I get you, right? And this is where you are right now. This is what you can handle, or this is what Hashem or halacha expects right now, right? And it's not, you're not a b'diavad Jew. You're not. We all are on our own level. We have to appreciate and recognize that. Yeah.
I would also say there's a reality to it.
Yeah.
Also, and I think that like the way that Breishit, like the whole Torah begins with stories about people. And I think, like, we didn't have time for this, and, you know, there'll be many other things, but, like, you can learn so much from the characters in Tanakh. And if, like, the people who are the Gedolim, like, we're not looking at, you know, like, really the people that we look to, you look at David HaMelech, you look at, look at their lives. Like, it's not so clear that everything's like that this is how it's supposed to be. I think that if we take time and really have like a more sophisticated, elaborate view and have more chachma, we realize, like, you know, it's more nuanced and it is, I mean,
yeah. Come back next week. Next week, I'll be discussing the challenge of, on one hand, anxiety, and on the other hand, bitachon. How do you balance those two? How do you balance those two? I really thank everybody for coming, and I really believe this is a big conversation. Do not hesitate to reach out to the two of us, either of us separately, to continue this conversation. you know, privately within the community. If there are other topics you feel like we haven't covered, we want to talk about this more, because I think this is so, so important and very, very relevant to us and to our lives. And thank you for coming.
And there's no means comprehensive, and in the back there are some like meaningful statistics and some like good points to make.
I did say that. I think I'm probably going.
like turn significant corners. Like, oh, 10 years, I had an obviously super visible. I also think that like word language is a whole other personality. So now, as opposed to just to so you have and say like now we know like the longer term therapy, like is curable. The cure, like, for real, it's long term. It's a longer term treatment, but it is curable. So I would actually think that based on the research, you could do this. If a person really goes through that, like whatever it is, because it does change like the pattern of thinking and whatever. Good, thank you for having me. Thank you.
Yeah. you know, that's not just with advertising, but in validation exacerbates the experience, right? So, like, if my environment,
I don't like the